Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. It's a sports day today on the program, and we're going to start by talking about the storied history of the Madison Mallards baseball team today. And a couple of guests for you to start the show. The author of the book, Baseball Like It Ought to Be, is one of our guests, Tom Alicia. Tom's a former longtime arts and entertainment writer, editor of Madison Daily Newspapers, won a National Music Journalism Award. And he has also written Beauty at Short about Dave Bancroft. And we had you on about that.
Yeah, Superior, Wisconsin's Dave Bancroft.
And now it's the Madison Mallards, and so it's great to have you with us today, Tom. And with us well, one of the guys that Tom wrote about a fair amount is Vern Stenman. And Vern's been, I think we were, 4 years ago or so? Something like that. President of the Madison Mallards and the Madison Nightmares. And Vern, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Also president, I think, of Big Top Events.
The Mallards, yeah, basically.
The Mallards, basically. And as we talk with our two guests, want to hear from you. Let us know why maybe you love the Mallards or the Eau Claire Express or the La Crosse Loggers or the Kenosha Kingfish or some of the other teams from the Northwest Baseball League. It's really a wonderful success story, and that'll be part of our conversation today, I'm sure. But let us know what questions you might have, or maybe just a comment about one of the teams, the Mallards or the Express or the Loggers or any of them. Number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. Tom, just start with you for a minute. What inspired you to write about the Mallards?
You know, it's as a Madison resident, every year I'm fascinated by the fact that the Madison Mallards continue to draw more than 200,000 fans a season. And to put that in perspective, there are 80 collegiate summer leagues nationwide, hundreds of teams, and no one is near them. And what should happen is it should start to tail off a little interest, but instead
it's bigger.
The interest just keeps going and going and going. And they did it without becoming the Savannah Bananas and going out truly outlandish on the field. So that success fascinated me. And sure enough, it turned into a very entertaining and fun book.
Oh, yeah. It's full of details and funny stories. And you must have done a lot of research for this.
Yeah,
you talked to a whole bunch of people, including probably Vern.
I did a lot of interviews with Vern, a lot of interviews with the team owner, the original team owner, who is still the owner, and that is Steve Schmidt. And getting to interview both of them and digging into their stories was probably one of the most enjoyable parts of the book.
I would guess so. Vern, you... That first Mallards game, what was that like?
It's a good question. It was cool because in that moment, no one expected us to succeed. You know, it's hard probably for a lot of people to go back to that moment in time, but there had been three teams that had failed at Warner Park in I think the previous 7 years. Yeah. Before we came in, I was 23 years old. Steve had never done anything really in the sports and entertainment space before. And we didn't know what we didn't know, I guess, you know, and we just said, let's go out and let's have fun. You know, Steve brought this really cool customer service focus. I kind of brought a lot of the fun promotional side of it and tried to do new things. And for a 23-year-old kid, putting him in that kind of atmosphere where you could try anything, and if it worked, that was great. And if you failed, nobody was paying attention anyway, so who really cares? And so it was really a fun time. That first game, you know, I think we drew right around 1,000 fans to that very first game. And at the time, that was a great crowd. You know, that was a good night. Now, we go on to play the rest of the month of June, and I don't think we get a crowd over 200. You know, so we were probably a little overly excited by that first night. But, you know, it was always fun, and that's been kind of the common thread, I think, from that very first day, you know, until, you know, right now.
Yeah. Tom, what stands out to you about the Mallards?
You know, I think that Steve Schmidt's commitment, the team has done well, and then the team has done well financially. And Steve Schmidt, instead of walking away, and this is true of Vern too, they didn't just stop and cash in. Steve Schmidt in particular keeps putting the profits that he makes and the money in back into the team. And that's what makes it so exciting. There's a video board that was put up last year that I think would be an envy of just about every single minor league team and maybe one or two major league teams. It's enormous. It's an incredible part of what they've done with Warner Park. And one of the things I liked about it, you got to go back to when Vern's talking about that first game, that first year, 2001. Warner Park was not the Warner Park that it is today. Warner Park, the Duck Pond, was a very struggling facility, and over the years, Steve has put in money to make sure that it is a fantastic facility.
I think about $10 million, if I'm not mistaken, from your book.
He's done a lot. He's done a lot for it. And it's in part because of his success. Of people who don't know Steve Schmidt, he is the very longtime owner, many decades, of the shoebox in Black Earth. It's sort of the iconic rural shoe store. And that's sort of his business, and this is what he's put a lot of attention into, and it's paid off.
You know, I've got a personal story about Steve Schmidt, which I think it captures a little bit of what he's like. I had a colleague who was from another country, Arab country, went out there to buy shoes for his whole family. Well, and there were like six family members. He bought like 10 pairs of shoes, and he goes to his credit card, and Steve said, "No, we don't." And he said, "I don't have my checkbook with me." And Steve said to him, "Oh, that's all right. Just mail us a check. You can take the shoes now."
It's funny you say that, because I've heard that exact same story from people directly, but from different countries and different places. And, you know, that focus on customer service, you know, I think is kind of unique in sports. You know, when's the last time you went to a Packers game and walked out saying, "Man, they took really good care of me"? You know, like, and that's that focus that Steve brought through his time with the shoebox. I think was very important from day one for us, and something that, again, I think is a little bit different with what we do and how we train our staff still to this day than you see with a lot of, you know, sports teams across the country.
And Tom, you're right about Steve and the name, the Mallards. Yes. It goes back. It's a fun story. Yes. How he came up with that name.
Well, he was one of the eight owners of minor league hockey team called the Madison Kodiaks. And they lasted one season in the late 90s. They were not successful. All of the owners lost some money. And but one team caught his eye, and it was the Quad Cities Mallards, a minor league hockey team that came to Madison. And when they came to Madison, they would also bring two or three busloads of their fans, and their fans just loved it. And to Steve, that's what he wanted then when he began owning a baseball team. He wanted that kind of enjoyment from fans. And as a result, and almost as a homage to the to the hockey team the inspiration. He wanted the team called Mallards because there were a lot of different names that were tossed out. Steve just says a lot of dairy. So you can imagine, you know, Moo, Milkman, right down the line.
It was a fun story. Tom in Madison has a comment. Let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Good morning, gentlemen. I hope you all have a safe and happy Fourth.
Thank you. You as well.
Thank you. My son, Patrick, spent a couple seasons as one of the Maynard the Mallard mascots, and he thoroughly enjoyed it, other than the heat at times. He would say things like, "Dad, when I'm in this duck outfit, it's very difficult to wipe the smile off my face." not only did he get us to the ballpark more, but he just had such a great time. I would highly recommend, if there's any younger people that are interested in stuff like that, contact the organization and look into it. If you've got any athleticism, any cheer, any of that kind of stuff, you will not quit smiling when you've got kids surrounding you and you're bending down to take pictures. And it's just, what a great experience for him. And I really thank you guys for giving him that opportunity.
Oh, well, Vern, a comment from you.
The employment side of things is something we don't talk a whole lot about, you know, but it's something we're really proud of. You know, every year we hire over 350 part-time employees. We have 26 full-time employees working for the team. And a really fun story is I think we have 6 people on our full-time staff today that started out as part-timers when they were like 14 or 15 years old and have worked their way through, come back every summer, go to college, get their degree, and then we bring them in to work full-time for us. So the guy running our concessions business today, he's only 26 years old, which is pretty young, to be doing what we're doing, but he's been working for us for 11 years because he started out when he was 14, and so we love that part of it. It is a fun place to work, and that's a huge focus. So I love to hear it, and I remember Patrick as our mascot. He was outstanding.
And as part of their outrageousness is Maynard comes off a zip line to open the game.
It's very cool.
One of my favorite stories, and I think Tom tells this one maybe, but is years ago, we rebuilt the stadium kind of in 2011, and we had problems with our zip line halfway through the year. We had to stop using it. And so there was probably 15, 20 games in 2011 that we didn't have the zip line mascot at the end of our season. And we had a season ticket holder that fall call us up in September and say, "You know what? I love the Mallards. Everything's great, but I'm not buying my season tickets to your baseball team until you tell me that the ziplining duck is going to be back in operation next year." And that for me always kind of summed up what Mallards were. You know, yeah, he loves baseball, this fan, obviously, but he also wanted that entertainment and that fun. And like, I'm not even coming if I don't get the ziplining duck.
And Maynard Mallard was the first bobblehead, was he not, Tom?
Yeah, he was. But one of the things about the Mallards, and they've had a lot of bobbleheads over the years, and some of them very creative, but one story stands out about the team's commitment to its fans, and that is bobbleheads that they had in, I believe it was 2003 or 2004, were on their way by truck from California. The truck broke down in North Platte, Nebraska. The Mallards on that night knew, or on that day knew, the truck broke down and would not be able to reach Madison in time. Steve, Vern, and the Mallards staff then hired a private plane in North Platte, Nebraska, which arrived at Dane County Airport, not too far from the duck pond. And by the third inning, I believe, the bobbleheads arrived.
Yep. It's funny, Tom, you mentioned that story because we had a similar thing come up this year, this spring.
Is that right?
So with all the tariffs and things like that, we do import bobbleheads. You can't find them made in bulk in the U.S., so you have to import them typically from China. And as everyone knows, you know, this has been a hectic few months in that space, to put it mildly. And so we, this Saturday night, we have a fun promotion called, we're rebranding ourselves as the Madison Neverminds, to kind of pay tribute to the band Nirvana recording the album Nevermind originally in Madison. And one of our staff came up with this brilliant idea of doing a snow globe that has Maynard as a baby in it, kind of floating in the water, very similarly to what the cover of that album looked like from the early 90s. And so mid-May, the supplier calls us up and says, we're worried about timing because of all the complications with shipping. And so I sat down with my staff, and it was going to cost us an extra $6,000 or $7,000 to fly these things in from China. And I sat down and I said, okay, do we have budget? Can we do this? And the staff is like, well, we just read the book. I don't think a budget really matters. We're doing this, right? So we flew these things in again this time. And so this Saturday night, the first 1,000 fans are going to get this really cool, you know, it's like a ceramic kind of a bobblehead type material inside this snow globe with blue snow to kind of emulate the cover of this iconic Nirvana album. And our players will be wearing these uniforms that'll look like the cover of the album, but our duck will be swimming in this pool of water. And again, like, it's fun, you know, and that's the common denominator from day one to today. And all the things that I think Tom captured very nicely in the book is that, you know, and Steve has said this to me multiple times over the years, like, if we're not having fun doing something in the work that we're in, we probably shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's become a rallying cry for us as well.
Tom Alicia, his book is titled Baseball Like It Oughta Be. And so he's with us today, as is Vern Stenman, who has been with the Mallards since the beginning. Started as a young guy, and now he's an older guy. It's been 25 years or so. And so he is president of the Madison Mallards and the Nightmares as well. And you can join in. Jim from Madison, we'll get to you in just a bit, but you can join in too at 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks so much for joining in today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We'll be talking about disc golfing a bit later on in the show, along in about 20 minutes or so. But right now we're talking about the Madison Mallards and the book that Tom Alicia wrote. It's Baseball Like It Oughta Be, How a Shoe Salesman's Madison Mallards and His Renegade Staff Ignited a Summer Collegiate Baseball Revolution. That's the title of the book. It's great to have him with us, as well as Vern Stenman, who is really one of the guiding lights behind, I guess we could say, behind the Madison Mallards and other ventures as well. You can join in 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. Let's give Jim and Madison a chance to join in. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Hey, good morning, Larry. And boy, what a wonderful and joyful subject to have, talking about baseball in Madison. You know, I have to tell you, I've been a longtime resident and have followed Madison when they were the Muskies, the Black Wolf, and of course now the Mallards, and have all the pennants in the garage and all of it. And it's just, I can't think of a better way to spend a summer night. And, you know, it's been, I think, for many of us, just a rite of passage for our kids, taking them out as kids and, you know, getting them to appreciate baseball. Keep in mind, these are college players that play in the North League. And so, you know, they're not professionals. Many aspire to be, but they're just good baseball players. And many of them, at least they used to live with families right in the Isthmus where I live. And so there's real connection to the community. But the thing I'd want to say about it is that I love the upgrades to Warner Park. I love everything that Mr. Schmidt, Mr. Stenman have done. I'm going to have to get Tom's book. If I have any complaint at all about the evolution of baseball in Madison, it's not peculiar to Madison. It's probably a sign of our times. But that is that one of the reasons you go watch a baseball game is to enjoy the summer night and take in baseball. And there's just so much overstimulation now between innings. And it's sort of like, you know, unless there's sound or music or a contest or somebody chasing somebody, people, I guess, get bored. I don't think that's the case. And I would suggest that if it would be possible, and of course I've got jets flying over me right now, I would suggest if it's possible, if you could have just a inning or, you know, between the fourth and the fifth inning, where there's just quiet and people can just listen to baseball and talk to each other.
Sure.
That would be a nice respite from all the overstimulation. But other than that, I love every minute of it.
And I'm with you on that, because I'm a baseball fan first myself, and we're always trying to find that balance. And actually, in the last year and a half, we've pulled back a lot. We used to do music in between every single pitch, and we don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. We have a live organ player now that we have had periodically, but not every year over the years. And most of our music in between at bats and things like that is now a live organ. And so you're right. I think that trying to find that balance has always been what the Mallards have been focused on. You know, we're not going to be the bananas and have our guys dancing in between every at bat or whatever, but we're also not the Brewers, and we understand that, you know. And so you're right, we got to continue to find that right balance. And I think you bring up some great points, and it's absolutely on our mind and something my staff and I are talking about almost every single day, how to find that right balance.
But Tom, I turn to you for a minute, because you write about the many, many ways, and Vern, of course, can back this up, that make the game more than a game. Just a lot of fun community kind of thing, and the giveaways and everything that go on are amazing.
Yeah, I mean, some of the promotions have been absolutely outrageous. They did the world's largest old fashioned 2 years ago. 1 year they did, they let fans, if they got a permanent logo of the Mallards tattooed, that they would be allowed for free in the duck blind. The duck blind is all you can eat, all you can drink. 40 people took them up on it.
Yep.
There was still a line. They weren't able to get a tattoo on everybody. There's the green morph suit, green, a person in an all green outfit between innings, jumping onto the field. Everybody in that stadium thought it was real. This is about 12 years ago, 12, 13 years ago. I saw it on YouTube. I thought it was real. And he runs across, and then six of the Mallards employees, all looking like security, never caught him, and he exited the stadium. The public address announcer played it perfectly. It was just, it was beautifully done. It ended up being on Jimmy Kimmel on his show that night on national TV. So they do a lot of things that are a lot of fun, even when they're making stuff up, which in the green morph suit is one of my favorite ones.
But where did I see the picture of the wiener on the bus?
Yes.
Yeah.
Bird, maybe you could talk about that.
Yeah. This goes back to the Muskies, where every time there's a foul ball, the PA announcer would say wiener. And there's an explanation early in the night, if you pay attention, where if you bring your foul ball that you catch in the stands or track down someplace in the stadium, you bring it to our concession stand, you get a free hot dog. And it started out with the Muskies. Yeah. Is really a cost saving measure. You know, like, this wasn't meant to be brilliant marketing. It was like, just please bring us the baseball back, because we can't afford to have any more baseballs lost. And And so we kept it going. I mean, I wish this were our tradition, but it's not. You know, we took it. I think we've built on it and kind of made it our own. And still to this day, every time there's a foul ball that goes into the stands, it says Wiener. Last year, we took a big chunk of our advertising budget and put it on a bus. It just said Wiener with a picture of Maynard. And if you didn't get the joke, like, you didn't get the joke, and it was kind of a waste of time. And I remember our marketing staff put it up on Twitter and said, yes, we spent almost our entire advertising budget on this. And we're proud of it. And it went viral online because people just thought it was so ludicrous, you know. And again, it kind of fit within that, you know, is that kind of fun, you know, type approach. And you know, we're super, we continue to have a lot of fun with that part of it.
Well, and you have T-shirt and you write about that too, Tom. T-shirt tosses, wiener tosses, bratwurst tosses.
It goes on and on. They were playing a team called the Alexandria Beatles, and fans could get in for free if they ate an edible bug, and many did.
250.
250.
We ran out of Beatles, and I'll never forget, there were like pretty young college girls coming up and eating Beatles, and I was giving them to them, and they were like mad that they didn't get the bigger Beatle, you know. It was a weird thing. And it's funny, that actually led to the Parks Commission in Madison requiring us to get permission for all of our promotions moving forward. Somebody on the Parks Commission didn't think it was as funny as I thought it was. And ever since we did that back in probably 2012 maybe or something like that, we have to go every January to the Parks Commission with our ideas and make sure that they're all comfortable with the things that we're doing. But that actually got us international media attention when we did the stupid little beetle thing. And so you got a free duck blind ticket again with that one as well. So you eat the beetle. We had 250 of them. We had another 250 people in line at that game to eat the beetle to get the free duck blind ticket.
Oh, man. And the duck blind itself, as you write about, Tom, it was 2017, I think it was, that the duck blind?
No, that was the 2017 was the main renovation.
Main renovation.
The duck blind has been with...
Yeah, a lot longer than that.
From the beginning.
Yep, 2001, there was some version of it. It's evolved a lot over the years. In 2017, you know, we always feel like we want to be reflective of the city of Madison and the things that are important to this community. And the Busch Light Duck Blind Project is one of those things that I'm really proud of, because we took 44 recycled shipping containers and custom fabricated them into this massive party space that we can put almost 2,000 people in, between private spaces and general admission spaces. And, you know, it's fun. It's a little bit weird. I think it's the only a permanent structure in all of sports in the world that's actually made out of shipping containers. And I think Madison cares about those kinds of things. And we think we actually operate in the most recycled stadium in the entire country, because we've used all kinds of different recycled parts to put our facility together over the years. And I think that hopefully people in Madison care about those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And the duck blind, it's part of major part of the reason for the Mallard's success over the years. But what it does is it allowed an adult audience, a partying crowd, to have their space, right field, along the right field line. At the same time, that's separated then from the family element of the audience, of the crowd, of which there's a significant portion of the fans. So they've gotten both of it. There's and that's part of the charm of the duck pond. It appeals to many.
And it's an all-you-can-eat-and-drink venue, too, which maybe we didn't detail. Yes. But, you know, we have 25 different styles of beer available out there, and then ballpark food all included for one price. And it's funny, because we were not the first team to do that in the country, but we were amongst the first teams in the country to do something like that back in 2001. And now you see that at major league venues, you know. And so we like to kind of take these kinds of risks over the years and see what kind of works and test it out. And kind of hopefully we can set some trends as well.
And what I also liked about it, and Tom, you wrote about this, that the over serving, let's put it that way, that there are arrangements and so forth for people. And you wrote about that.
Yeah, some, you know, there's a, and this came from a story Vern had told, that, you know, he would see a good handful, a dozen, two dozen cars left behind wisely. You know, it can be, you know, when you get all you can drink in Madison, is it can be a dangerous combination. But there's no doubt over the years that the Mallards have made sure, in terms of security and other factors, that, you know, that they can keep that running without it getting completely out of hand. I think at other places it would get far more out of hand.
Yeah, because there really hasn't been an issue in the 25 years.
I hate to say things like this, you know, I'll knock on wood if this is a wood table here, but we have not had, so we work really closely with the Madison Police Department, and every year we talk to them and say, hey, did you have any issues last year? We have off-duty officers working at every game, they've never tied a DUI to our stadium, you know, which I think speaks to some of the things we're doing from a planning perspective. But I think it speaks to Madison as well, you know, that, yeah, they're going to have fun. They're going to party a little bit, but they're going to be smart. And that's something that we're very proud to have that kind of fan.
I want to, there's one story that you told in the book that I'm sure Steve is quite familiar with, too, is the Gary Coleman story. Oh, okay. Yes. As an example of the kinds of things that are in the book, I think that Gary Coleman is a good one.
It's a chapter, actually.
Yeah.
It's called The Gary Coleman Lesson. And this is a story, and this was, again, getting to interview Steve and Vern at such length. There were some extremely, extremely funny stories over the years, successes and some that weren't as successful. The Gary Coleman one probably would be somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. Gary Coleman was brought in to make an appearance. A lot of celebrities, B-list celebrities, you know, would do that. Gary Coleman would be probably a more prominent one. Vern wanted Gary to take an at-bat, and Gary didn't want to, at least initially. Vern was able to convince him. he had written a script. Everything went well, and the umpire made a comment. The umpire who was in on it, the opposing coach who was in on it, Gary Coleman who was in on it, and the, you know, the umpire may have said something about Gary Coleman's height that bothered him. It's tough to watch because I have seen it on, you know, on YouTube as the entire clip. And Gary Coleman, after it said to him about his size, he jumps up and down. It's one of the funnier things that he's done, to argue with the umpire. But, you know, in the end, and Vern can talk to this too, was that the lesson was that it got national attention by ESPN. It got national attention by Fox Sports. But it was a national story, and the Mallards are very much a local team. And that local team, that local, being part of that local community, is what draws fans, not a fact that you got, were on the news on ESPN Sports Center.
Yep. And the thing that stands out to me is that wasn't a stretch where we were very used to selling out every single night. We were getting 6,500 fans every single night. And that was a Friday night in July, I think. And we did not sell out. We weren't even close to selling that game out. And it had always been a goal of ours to get on ESPN. You know, what minor league sports promoter wouldn't want to get their team name on ESPN somehow? And it's the lesson that we pulled from it. And I think Tom does a nice job talking about this. Again, it's like we talk about being reflective of the city of Madison and what matters to them. And they didn't really care that we were doing this, you know. That the idea of seeing Gary Coleman get thrown out of a baseball game for whatever reason wasn't appealing to people in Madison. And so I think that over time, what we learn here is, you know, Tom mentioned the world's largest old-fashioned. You know what? People in Madison care about the world's largest old-fashioned. old-fashioned, and we had thousands of people come out, sold the stadium out because they have pride in that. But do they have that same pride in Gary Coleman getting thrown out of a baseball game? No. We didn't get national publicity with the old-fashioned thing that we did a few years ago, but we got great attention in Madison. We got great traction in this community, and those are the kinds of things that, you know, have really become our focus over time, and a big thing that we've learned as we go.
Yeah, it was funny. You used a 6-foot long baseball bat.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Stirring stick.
Stirring stick. Oh my gosh. Well, the book is so much fun to read, and of course the Mallards are so much fun to go and see play, and I think, and one of the things that struck me in the book, you mentioned how many games that Steve Schmidt has attended.
Steve Schmidt has missed over the years, in 25 years, 5 home games. Yep. And
that's like 800 games or something.
Yes, over 800 games.
Yeah.
I said, what were the 5? What happened? And he had a reason for each of them. But my favorite was, one of them was that he was going to a wedding for a friend. And then he continued with the second one, the third one, the fourth one. And the fifth one turned out to be the friend got
married again.
He got divorced and was married again. So it's the same guy twice. But yeah, you know, that's one of the things is... people wondering, is Steve Schmidt there? Take a look behind the backstop, a little higher up, and you'll see him there. And you know what? I think he's loosening up now. And Vern knows this better than I do in terms of enjoying maybe a little bit more of what he's created now. I get that impression.
Absolutely.
He's up in his
70s
now.
It's fun it's late 70s. But yet, you know, at the same time, he's still the shoe salesman.
Yeah.
He's still the person that cares so much about what the fans are, whether they're enjoying themselves or not.
He's got a fascination with rope lights. So if you've ever driven by our stadium at night, it's always lit up. Steve personally puts those lights up. You know, he loves them. And there's a section of signage that goes up in our stadium right when you come in. Still to this day, he comes in with a group of guys from the shoebox, and they put those signs up themselves. And I don't know why. I mean, we could do it ourselves, but he does it. And it's kind of a testament, I think, to the style that he takes as an owner.
It might be my favorite chapter is talking to Steve about his background, his entire life. The shoebox is an iconic business in Wisconsin as a whole, and then what he's done with the Mallards is remarkable, and it's unheard of nationally. So there are 9 teams in the Northwoods League in Wisconsin.
And they've
emerged.
It's an amazing story, and I'll just close by saying, if you've ever been on Lake Eganza in the evening after dark and gone by Steve's house, all those string lights are going. Well, listen, this has been a lot of fun. Vern, thank you so much for coming by. Tom, thank you so much for the book and for being with us as well. It's been a real treat to have you both here. I hope we can do this again. It was a lot of fun. Tom Alicia, his book is titled Baseball Like It Ought to Be. And Vern Stenman, a very critical part of the book and president of the Madison Mallards and the Nightmares, which I wish we'd had time to talk about, but maybe next time we'll do it. All right. Thank you, guys. Coming up, we're going to talk disc golf. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.